Welcome back, Wes.
Thank you.
How was the wilderness?
It was everything I hoped it would be. I did not get eaten by a bear. I did not fall off a mountain. I did not get impaled by a bison. There's a lot of ways to die in Yellowstone. Luckily, I avoided all of them.
I don't think I've ever heard of the prospect of getting impaled by a bison.
My Jeep got blindsided by a bison while we were there.
But impaled?
2 days after we left, a 9-year-old girl got launched by a bison because her and her group were too close. There's video of it.
She really?
Yeah.
Amongst yourselves. I'm going to look at something that may or may not be that video.
Yeah, I watched it, and I just was like freaking out. Like, we were just there. Apparently, it was a group of like 50 people standing within 10 feet of it. I'm like, you guys are just asking for it. I thought the parents should have been held responsible, but they weren't.
Do people not know how wildlife works?
Apparently, there's signs everywhere that says, like, these are all wild animals. Stay 25 yards or whatever away.
Too many Disney movies?
People trying to get selfies with animals.
No, yes. They have a stuffed bison in one of the visitor centers that says, yes, you can take a selfie with me. It has like a hashtag for it and stuff. But it was good. Saw Old Faithful. Went camping. Yeah, that's the reaction I had.
Whee! Boom. She would have landed on her feet too. I'm sorry for that little girl. She's my son's age, but she got launched up probably 10, 12 feet in the air and did a full somersault. And if she would have had her wits about her or had any kind of official gymnastics training. Or ballerina training, she would have landed on her feet and stuck to landing. But don't get too close.
Luckily, she wasn't hurt too bad, from what I understand.
Your parents enrolled her in parkour classes now.
There are all kinds of signs that warn you about like not stepping off the boardwalks and like hot spring areas, and there's so many different ways. But it was good. We explored Yellowstone for three nights at a campground. We saw Old Faithful, saw a bunch of animals, coyotes, bear, giant black bear walked right in front of our car. It's pretty awesome. Drove a Tesla, let a Tesla drive me. That's what is required apparently. In the experience. The kids had fun. Had a great time.
Great.
Missed you guys.
No. Well, I wasn't here last week because I was in Louisville for the Louisville Maker Faire planning meeting. And it just happened to coincide right when we record. And Jimmy DiResta was up there and we were building a pizza oven and hanging out with a bunch of cool people trying to figure out exactly what the post Maker Faire is going to look like. So how to try to not necessarily rebrand it, because the branding package and everything that you buy into still exists with the Maker Faire branding, but how to like give it a personal identity, kind of like what we talked about after the last Maker Faire we got back. Like, what do the individual Maker Faires do? And so that was a big part of what I was trying to explain to them, is that there's an opportunity now to make it kind of community centric and not rely on the big name to carry it, to make it something very connected to where you're from. So it was a really good time. So sorry I wasn't here to record. My bad.
It's all right. We managed.
Helen, what have you been up to?
Man, I've been up to so many things all at once. I got the video done for the My Little Pony Mini Maker workbench that I was going to upload today, because I figured Thursday, if not Sunday, Thursday would be a good day to upload videos. But then Cox went down in our city today, and we all got to experience life without internet. So I decided to postpone that until tomorrow. So I'm uploading that tomorrow. I'm finishing up my Excite bike shed. I'm building a baby gate because my baby took her first steps yesterday. And so now we need to further baby-proof stuff in the house. So I got to build a baby gate. And then I am also mapping out and planning my choose your own adventure videos that I'm going to start doing for my channel. So wow. I've been super busy. My two Ninjago videos have been performing insanely well. Like, I don't know where all these people are coming from. It still surprises me every time I do, like, swipe down to update and see the number growing and growing. But they're taking off.
So that's exciting.
It's exciting to see, man.
It's also kind of weird. I monetized my channel, which I hadn't done yet. But when my fire video started taking off, I monetized the channel. I've got over 500,000 views with that. I got my first little, like, paycheck, but like, hey, you earned enough money to get paid by YouTube. And I was like, whoa, $144. That seems not like a lot. And I went in and looked at my metrics and realized that 500,000 views on YouTube equals $144 when you're me.
Well, so it depends on too, like, the time of year.
Yeah, I mean, I know there's a lot that goes into it with, like, CPM and all that kind of stuff. And I talked to Brad AdSense.
Yeah, the AdSense rates differ month to month.
And location. Norway, my CPM in Norway is phenomenal. Everywhere else, it's less. I don't know what it is about Norway, but
they're gullible.
So I don't think I'm gonna be full time with this anytime soon, because it's not as profitable as I thought it was gonna be, even for it. Because I've gotten 101 million views in the past 30 days. So no, 1 million views, not her 1 million.
Like, yeah, the number's a little bit off.
1 million, whatever. Over a million. I've gotten over a million views in the last 30 days. And I was like, ooh, wow. Let's see how much I can cash in on all these sweet, sweet views. It's not much.
Well, I mean, it's aggregate too. So it's a snowball. The more that you do that, the more those videos that you made right now will still be viewed later. And so each month, the views will build on themselves. Your library will continue to get viewed. And so it's not just two videos that are doing well, you know, this pay period, the next one, if you get a third one, then you have three, and I've got five, and I whatever. And so they continue to build on themselves.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, YouTube is, to think about it, you're going to get, I guess, like 0.003 cents per view.
Yeah. I think I did the math and I realized it's 16 cents for every 1,000 views. So however you want to break that down, it's what your eyeballs are worth on my channel.
That's why stuff like Patreon, when people people do like a dollar level, which doesn't seem like a lot. And it's like, if you put out a video a month, that $1 from a single person, think about how many views on a regular video it takes you to earn a single dollar rather than, you know, a drop in the bucket for someone else. So if you're looking to support the people that you like on YouTube, like, a dollar may not seem like a lot, but if you take the amount of views it takes to earn that dollar on YouTube, it pays off quite a bit on Patreon.
Yeah, and I only have a couple subscribers, but man, I'm thankful every month that they're helping me make stuff and continuing to make stuff, just like our patrons here. So what have you guys been up to?
I've been doing a lot of stuff around the house, mainly trying to work on my garage to turn it into kind of like a makerspace for my kids, but that's still a couple of months down the line because I still have a lot of cleaning to do. But last week I put out a video of the He-Man sword that I've been working on for the last couple of weeks. And went up, and now it's out, and now on to the next one, which I have two more videos I'm hoping to finish before the end of this month, now that it's August, because I only have a week and a half left of my summer, and then I'm back to work.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. Summer's already over.
Yep. The only full month we get off is July, and that's already gone, so.
Yeah.
Not a whole lot of time left, but got a lot done. At least got two videos out. That's it.
Yeah. And they were fun. Thanks. I really liked your He-Man sword video.
Thanks. It's performing a little bit better than some of my other ones, but still extremely slow. So it is right now. So, who wants to kind of lead us into what we said we were going to talk about tonight?
Well, I think Wes, Wes should kind of open the can of worms, since he hinted at what he wanted to talk about, but didn't really delve too much into specifics. So,
well, a couple of days ago, all of us got the news that a fellow YouTuber, Grant Thompson, he passed away pretty suddenly and tragically in a paragliding accident. And I think it caught a lot of people off guard. Both, you know, huge fans of his, casual fans, and just, you know, fellow humans, basically. And it wasn't the catalyst to make me think about this more often, because I was already sort of thinking in this train of thought since I hit my 40th birthday. Kind of comes along with the package, right? Your over the hill kind of mentality. So I've been thinking a lot about like mortality and, you know, what that kind of means with now with kids and, you know, my not very large body of work, but it would play into that as well. Like how, like if I pass away, does my AdSense roll over to a person? Like how, like all the specifics of those things, like in the EULA, I never looked in there to see if you can like leave an AdSense account to a person. Like it's going to continue to make money whether or not I'm here, but do I have to be alive in order for it to make money? Is that a stipulation? I don't know. There's a lot of questions. So this is sort of like a general intro to this topic. We talk about Grant some and our own thoughts of this around this topic that most people don't really usually talk about, but it's definitely necessary. It's a part of life and having kids. And I don't think we ever kind of broached this directly. So I thought it would be an interesting topic. We have different perspectives and with our own families and stuff that we could get into as well. But what do you guys think?
Yeah, I think it makes for a really interesting topic. And, you know, we're all fathers and have families. So I think it's a, you know, it's worth talking about.
Well, I have a kind of a practical question for everybody. Do you guys have a will, like an actual like last will and testament?
We do. My wife and I have one, but we have not updated it since we've had kids.
You got it when you were in the Navy?
No. I did. Did I have one in the Navy? I don't even know if I did, actually.
They kind of make you have one.
Yeah, I think you sort of default to. Yeah, you just kind of like write down who, kind of generally who you'd leave the stuff to. But Catherine and I went on a trip. I think the timing for this is accurate. We went on a trip before we had kids to Colorado and went skydiving. And before that trip, we're like, well, this is risky. So let's, you know, if there's ever a better time to fill out a will, it's before you go skydiving when you initial all these areas to like not be able to sue anybody from falling to your death. So it doesn't include anything with kids. So we definitely need to revise that, I believe, because it also take into account like custody issues and things of that nature. So it's definitely probably a good time to address that. How about you guys?
Yeah, we've started the process, and verbally, I think we've got a lot of the nitpicky stuff figured out already, and as far as like custody and things that you were talking about, the details we haven't quite worked out. But I don't know, it's like one of those topics that there's an ebb and flow to it, where sometimes you talk about it and sometimes you don't, and lately, just with being busy having a new baby and house and like all that kind of stuff, is not something that we've talked about at all. And like kind of like you, now that, you know, kids are in the mix and, you know, trying to figure out everything as far as legality, logistics surrounding them and the house and my content, all that kind of stuff, is something we definitely need to talk about again.
I haven't. My wife and I have talked about it, like, well, we've been married almost 13 years. We've talked about it a lot, just have not done it yet. And it's on a list of things that we have to do, kind of like the adult responsibility type thing we have to do. and we just have not gotten to it yet. It needs to be put at the top of the list, though. I mean, it really does for a lot of different reasons. Maybe this next year I'll push for it a little bit more. We've already had a lot of this hard conversation. We've already had the hard conversations, but we just haven't put it in legal writing yet. Is really the only difference for us.
Yeah. I got a will when I was in the Army because I mean I was in the Army. I was deploying. It was mandatory. And then right before I got out, I wanted to kind of take advantage of my free legal service, so we did it again. And we had already had my son, and so we just they put it in really generic terms. You didn't like piecemeal your kids out to different people. It was, you know, the children. So if you own property, I think it was like things that if you own a substantial amount of property or children, like those are the things that you really need to spell out what you want to happen, because those are the ambiguous things. Is they're going to leave it up to family members, or most states they leave it up to your next of kin. So if like something happened to the four of us at Maker Faire, if the stage collapsed and we all just erupted in flames, then everything would default to your next of kin, your spouse, or if you're divorced, like your oldest child, or if you have no next of kin and maybe your parents or something. As far as I understand, like YouTube, I'm pretty much dead on YouTube. And as long as you have an account linked to your content, like I don't have to add anything to it. I don't do anything to my YouTube account. And then every month I get a little bit of money that trickles in. So as long as it's linked to an account, that account should still get paid, because I haven't touched my channel in about 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think it changes because of the W-2 though, because you have basically a
income source.
Yeah. It's income source. So that's tax reasons.
Is it paid out to you as an individual or to an entity like an LLC?
Well, for me, it's individual.
Yeah, for me, it's individual too.
Mm-hmm. For me, it's an LLC. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, same.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, with you guys with business, I don't know how that would work. That may complicate things.
Well, you have to have a different will for the business for, you know, what to do in that event.
Catherine's co-owner. We're 50-50 in geeksmithing, so I guess that would make sense.
I remember for the kids, it was the lawyer that we talked to, they were like, you need to specify like the group of people that you want. Because if it's not your family, like if your family has any kind of issues or whatever, or they live a lifestyle you don't agree with, like they're going to default to giving them to family. So if you are of the faith where you have, you know, godfather and godmother for your parents, and that's legally binding. I had a guy when I was deployed who was 19, and like his friends had a kid and they're like, oh, you're going to be the godfather and your wife's going to be the godmother. And they were Catholic and they made it, you know, legal. And he was deployed. He was like, holy crap. Like they both just died in a car accident. And so why his wife and he, who had been married for about a month, were about to receive these like three kids.
Wow.
And they're like, what in the world did we just do? I'm like, well, hey, dumb, you made that legal. That's exactly why you do that. It's not some cute Snapchat kind of thing that you just did. Like that's
Facebook
real.
Status. Godfather.
Yeah. So if there are people in your life, like really close friends that you want your kids to be with and to grow up with, then they're not going to them unless you specify that in writing in your will. And that's so whenever you do actually go, I think you can get on LegalZoom and you can do a lot of this stuff on LegalZoom, because a lot of it are kind of like standard answers unless you want something overly specific. But when you go to do that, like have real conversations with people, because one day if you and mama again get mauled by a bison, like, and the people that you just really, really like one day show up with, you know, your kids on their doorstep, they need to be prepared. Because I know people that happened to, and it was awkward. And I think they ended up not like rejecting sounds like a bad word, but pretty much saying like, no, you guys need to go to family. And so they didn't end up with their kids, but I don't know what process that went through, what legal thing they had to file or whatever. But talking about you dying is a super uncomfortable thing, but it's
or it can be depending on how you like
true
talk about it.
I had some interesting things put in. I think I finished spelling it out. Maybe I didn't, but I wanted a bunch of doves released at my funeral, but everybody be equipped with a zapper. I don't know why. I just thought that would be hilarious. Like, that would be me, right? Like, can you imagine anything more me than that?
Oh my gosh.
I think that would be cool, but that's just me being weird. Like, I would love, I love like thinking about the technicalities of like, well, can you say you want someone to eat a Big Mac if they're vegetarian, if it's in your will? Like all these like weird, straight funny things to like take.
Wanted.
Yeah, it's what he wanted. Like take the sort of negative out and kind of put some fun into the conversation and kind of see what you can do with it.
When I was deployed, I had to fill out, it was in my will and it was also in like these specific set of instructions. And it was like, if you die or if you are seriously hurt and you need to be evacuated and sent to these hospitals or just in the event of your death, who do you want notified and who do you want to show up like at the hospital? And I was like, could this be anybody? And they're like, I mean, yeah, it could be anybody. They're like, we need to notify the person. We need to know their contact information.
So who'd you put?
I put my wife because I love her. And then I put John Stamos. And as I am as dead serious as I could possibly be. And I looked up like a contact email from like the, I don't know, get in contact with your stars or whatever. I don't know if it was still valid. And I had very specific instructions. I was like, I want this kind of funeral. I'm like, I want in the front row. I want my wife. I want my mom, my dad, and John Stamos. And I remember the army doctor, the army lawyer. And she just like looked at it a lot. And she's like the John Stamos. I'm like, yeah, there's only one. She kind of snickered. She's like, are you serious? I was like, are you about to send me to war? Are you serious? I was like, this is the least that you could do is let John Stamos know that I died. And then when he shows up, everybody's going to be like, what the heck is John Stamos doing here? And then I'll just be laughing.
It's probably a bit like Gary Sinise.
I know. That was my thought.
Oh, my Gary Sinise interaction was after I had already got out of the Army.
Yeah.
But with that, in that silliness...
Yes.
Like what you want to happen. I mean, your last will and testament, like what do you want your funeral and stuff to be? Like that stuff is all just kind of vanity at a certain point.
Sure.
But things like living wills, like do you want to be put on a ventilator if you're in a vegetative state? Like those kind of things are snap answers. If something happens to you and you can't answer for yourself, you know, does your spouse know your wishes? And are you able to articulate why you want it that way so that in the desperate, crazy, like heat of the moment, terrible situation you find yourself in, they're not left with the sole responsibility of like, what would you want? Or do they feel the responsibility of having to make a decision to either keep your floppy body alive or to not? And those conversations, maybe it was just, yeah, because I was in the Army, those conversations were thrust upon you. Like, you have to have this. This is your new norm, is to talk about these things, where I imagine other people with just normal jobs, unless they're confronted with a family member or something like that who had passed away, don't really think about those things on a date.
That's not – I mean, my wife and I have had tons of those conversations, actually even really early on. Yeah. And we don't – like we, like I said before, we don't have it in legal writing, but we know each other's preferences already. As of right now, we'd have to go off of that, but I know that we still need to create those legal documents. I mean, even as far as knowing that, you know, I want to be cremated, I want my ashes spread in this place, you know, all that stuff we've already spelled out to each other.
That's a good conversation too. My grandmother, for a Christmas present, bought her whole family, like my dad and his sisters and stuff, like burial plots with headstones and stuff already in place. And so I remember when I would go see all my grandparents, she would go out and she would put flowers on the headstones of the people of like her family members that were still alive. Cause she just liked the way it looked.
What? Did she start going like this?
No, it was so weird. And she had like all the stuff hanging on the walls. I remember I would cook breakfast with her and she had this big cast iron skillet that I loved. And I remember one time I pulled it off the wall and I had a post-it note that said like Janet. I'm like, I thought it was part of like some game, some scavenger hunt or something. I'm like, oh, that's cool. I'm like, you guys playing games? She's like, nope, that's going to Janet. And she's like, oh, she's like, Josh, you need to get yourself some post-it notes. If there's anything around here, you better put your name on it. I'm like, what in the world are you talking about? She's like, when we die. I'm like, grandma, like, ugh. Like, that's kind of weird. And at the time, you don't want to think about, you know, people that you love dying. And I'm like, and I'm pretty sure this post-it note system you have isn't legally binding. But I don't know. I didn't go as far in my will as to, like, name my possessions and who is to get what. And I'm pretty sure that if you have things like that in your life that mean certain things to certain people, rather than them potentially bickering or whatever, like, you need to cause some drama and put somebody's name to it.
Right, I've gotten some animation cells in my Nintendo collection. Who's going to get that? Who cares enough to get that?
Dibs.
Which one, though? Oh, all of it. Okay, cool.
Yeah. That's legally binding. You heard it here, folks.
Dibs.
And you think Double about the amount of possessions that we own and the what I think about more is like my kids. What would mean the most to them? Because I know that they would fight over a lot of stuff. And there's a couple of things I think I'd like to pass down to them, but everything else maybe to sell it at an estate sale. And you kind of take it out of the equation.
Yeah, with kind of that as a segue, I mean, when I made the decision to do this YouTube channel and do all this other kind of stuff, part of the reason for doing all of this, like a conscious part of my decision to do it was to, you know, have a legacy for my kids, for something that they could be involved in and that is there for forever, that they can go back and watch, you know, that moment when we made that thing together, or when we did this together. Or, I mean, part of the video that I'm putting out tomorrow is I made this mini maker workbench for my daughter, so she has a place that she can like make her own stuff. She has her place to do her stuff and get glitter everywhere, and it's okay because it's her place. But like, in putting that together, I also did like this scavenger hunt where, you know, I hid clues everywhere and she had to go and figure out the clues, and the clues ended up at the workbench. And like, that's part of the video. And she can, like, whether or not she remembers it when she's older, she can go back and watch those moments. And I think that's one of the cool things about being a content creator is the fact that you are making this legacy that will be there for forever. You know, so long as the internet's down, it doesn't just shut down like it did this afternoon for us.
Right.
Well, when my mom passed away, she wrote my brother, my sister, and I a letter. And I think I got two letters, and I have them somewhere. And one of them is typed, and it takes, like, the personality out of it. But my wife had a thing that she has, a notebook, like a journal for each one of our kids. And I don't know how often she writes in it. I know she does it every birthday. But, you know, from the day they were born, she has written, like, letters to them about them, milestones and things that they have, not just, like, key metric data points you learn to step at this point, but, like, notes from her past self to future them. And I think that that is amazing. And it's, like, stuff that, Wes, I know you can relate to. It's things about yourself or things about parenting that you want to be able to ask that, you know, when that person is gone, so is that knowledge.
Yeah.
And it sucks. God, it sucks. Like that quick answers to something that just don't exist anymore. And so with her having those kind of like reference guides, if you will, to the younger versions of themselves, like I value those. And they're not even about me. I've never even read them. But I encourage her as many chances as we get or she gets. I'm like, when's the last time you wrote that thing? Like if it's a holiday or whatever, like talk to them in the future because, I mean, you're everything to your kids.
Yeah, yeah. As you're alluding to, my mom also passed away when I was younger. She passed away when I was in between junior and senior year of high school. She had colon cancer. And yeah, like you say, like a lot of things that, you know, I'd love to ask her, it just kind of evaporates, like all that knowledge and that whole, you know, 44 years of experience and stupid things like favorite this, favorite food, favorite color, favorite, you know, just little things you don't always think about.
Was there any like journals or anything that she had or kept or anything like that?
She also had, she wrote me a letter, and my half-sister, a letter as well, somewhere within the year, I think, of her passing. But I mean, that only has so much information in it.
Yeah.
You know, and you can only read it so many times.
And it's so immediate.
Yeah.
And it talks about like, and this is not like, I guess, a bad thing, but it is in the context of my mom had colon cancer as well, of like her being sick and like, you know, I love you, I'm going to miss you kind of thing, which I mean is amazingly heartfelt and makes me choked up.
Right.
But the little practical stuff about like maybe your medical history or things you did as a kid, or you have some weird scar or family members, or I don't know, the little things that you were just too immature or young to understand or remember.
Or to know to ask. Yeah.
Yeah. Like those are the things like when they pop up when you have kids, I'm like, I have no idea what to do right now. I have no manual. I have no one in my immediate surrounding that knows the youngest version of me. Like, what did I do? Give me some context. And I remember when we found out that Tiffany was pregnant, my mom had passed away a year and some change before that. Like, I pulled out my phone and I called my mom. Like, I wanted to tell her. I was so happy. She was a nurse. And I'm like, yes. And I had that realization that, like, I don't get to talk to her. And I busted out crying. Like, I cried like I never cried before. And then the moment that he was born, I'm like, I need my mom. Like, I need nurse advice. I need mom advice. I need what did baby Josh do advice. Like, all of those things are when you are gone, unless you put that information out, not saying you should chronicle every single thing of every single moment of your kids' lives, but your perspective of them is amazing to be able to have, you know, that context into your parents, because you can relate to them where you couldn't relate to them as a kid. They're just these, you know, they're your parents. They're super dumb and they get in your way and But like at that certain level, when you empathize with them and you look at them as kind of peers, that's when you need that information the most.
Yeah, it's I feel very lucky in that respect, because I mean, my great grandma got married when she was 14. My grandma got married when she was 16. My mom got married when she was 18. So by the time I had my oldest, we had five generations of family alive at the same time. And so, like you were saying, being able to talk to people and have, you know, share experiences. Oh, when you were little, oh, never mind that. When she was little, it was like this. And you're just like your great, great grandpa when he was five and did this. And like, if it wasn't for the fact that they were there telling me these stories, like I wouldn't know. I would have no idea. I mean, there's my family's really into like genealogy and preservation and like the history of our family. So there's like heirlooms that have been passed down for hundreds of years and all this other kind of stuff that that is sitting in my grandparents' house right now. And I've kindly tried to tell my grandma, I'm like, you need to tell me all the stories of this stuff. Because it's like, if something ever happens to you, like all those stories, all that association with this thing, hey, this pocket knife that is like worn down to the nubs, like what is the story behind that? This fork and spoon that, you know, were crafted in the early 1800s. Like, what is the story? Like, without you telling me those stories, like if anything ever happened, all of that would be gone. The connection to those things, the tangible, you know, because those things are still tangible, but the connections to them would be lost. They'd be gone. So that's something I need to push more harder for my grandma, is to get those stories out into the world. And
I would especially say health issues. Like, you have any kind of health issues, that stuff goes to, that information goes to your kids and provides them with like a medical history that, you know, my mom died of colon cancer when she was 48 or 49. Wes, you said your mom was 44.
44, yep.
So I went to go get a colonoscopy when I was 20-something, and they're like, no, you don't need to have one. I'm like, yeah, I'm pretty sure that I do. And they're like, no, you don't need it. And I was turned down by so many Army doctors. They're like, you don't fit the age criteria. And so the moment that I got out of the Army, I walked up to a real-life doctor. I'm like, I need a colonoscopy, please. And they're like, you don't really fit the criteria. I'm like, I don't want to hear that. the first colonoscopy I got, they found 3 cancerous polyps and they removed them. And they're like, holy crap, we would have lost money on this. They're like, we had no idea that that was in there. They're like, this is atypical. I'm like, no, duh, it's atypical. Like, I knew that information, which made me make an informed decision about my medical needs. Yep. And so if your kids don't understand those things or know those things, like, I remember my mom had like a thyroid problem, and like her mom and so on have like had breast cancer and all this. And that's information that my dad might not have known.
Sure.
But it's stuff that's like super important for my health decisions and my kids' health decisions. So, and I know that this is a maker centric podcast. And so having like my YouTube channel, the same as yours, I want to show videos of my kids hammering nails, which is an amazing life lesson to be handy. But I don't want to skim over the really practical things of leaving information, really necessary information for your family.
Yeah. Yeah, I was given the same spiel by the Navy as well before I got out. I approached one of the Navy doctors, and they gave me the same runaround. And just like you, like as soon as I got out, I'm on every 5-year regimen, and I actually have one at the end of this month.
I was on it every 2 year, and then they moved it to every 5.
Yeah.
That's just something I know about me that I wouldn't have known about me. And that very first time, they're like, these are the kind of polyps that turn into cancer. I'm like, if I wouldn't have known that, and if I wouldn't have paid enough attention or been that diligent, the same thing that happened to her probably would have happened to me. Like, and that just made me angry. And not at her that she wouldn't leave this information, but angry at the fact that I was presented with something that if I would not have had that information, it would have probably killed me. I'm like, and that's ridiculous. So whether it's uncomfortable or whether it's whatever, I think you kind of owe it to your kids to leave them and your family as a whole with what makes you, you, the good, the bad, the gross, put it in a journal somewhere.
Yeah. Mm.
I don't know how to segue from that.
Well, back to Grant.
Okay, Grant.
Yes.
Grant had a hierarchy of people. So it wasn't just him. Like his business, and even in the video they put out today, they're saying that, you know, the channel is going to go on. He set up that channel so that he could take a step back so that he wouldn't constantly be the face and the presence, which, I mean, good for them. We've had conversations that I like to make stuff surrounding, you know, the same kind of concept. And those are kind of private to us, but it's really strange that out of everybody that we know on YouTube, it's like, oh, so-and-so died. Like statistically, yeah. Like I'm surprised more people that we know honestly haven't died yet. Izzy has this back thing, so where he's like in a wheelchair now. Izzy Swan, who was on the show. And if you're in the maker community, you should definitely know who Izzy Swan is, but this massive bull of a person, this huge predominant force and this driving, you know,
creative
OG godfather of this, you know, maker movement, like put out a video the other day where he's pretty much like bound to a wheelchair because of a degenerative, you know, disc disease in his back. And it's super strange.
Yeah. It's thing. I mean, you don't, I don't know. It's not that I'm in denial about it, but it's like I always assume that you guys are going to be there, that like the people I know are going to be there, that my parents are going to be there, that my grandparents are going to be there. Like, I don't know. I just kind of assume that nothing will change. I know it will. My grandfather, my dad's dad died a couple weeks ago, and, you know, we've been trying to do the, you know, everything surrounding his funeral and taking care of, you know, the house that we found out he's the house that we're like, wait, well, what do we do with it now? Like, you know, because he didn't have all that. And so now we're left with trying to figure out how to manage all of his assets because he's not here anymore. And it's just kind of like the Grant thing. When I found out that Grant died, because, you know, I'd met Grant before, and then, you know, at Maker Faire in Barrie area, saw him because he was there with us as well. And then when we found out Grant died, it was like, it was the, kind of that semi moment of denial where you're like, but I just saw him not too long ago. Like, how, what, how? Because I think that's an initial response of, oh, no, I just saw him. Like, he's fine. He's okay. No, he's gone. But getting past that moment, whether it's with somebody or family or something like that, there's always that transition of having to go from, you know, hey, they were there, and now they're not. Mm-hmm. And then moving forward from that. So, yeah.
Yeah, I feel like I don't know how else to word this, but I kind of paid my dues early on for a lot of my family dying, unfortunately. So it kind of set up an interesting dynamic for like my kids and like their grandparents. They only have one side of grandparents at all. Like they're my wife's side, or my wife's parents rather. So they have to like kind of pull double duty, you know, spoil them twice as much kind of thing. And like, I don't know, it can be difficult thinking about in that kind of kid perspective. Like, I was raised by my grandparents, and my grandmother that I live with, she passed away when I was 12. My grandpa, I lived with him in Southern Virginia. And while I was living with him, my dad, when I was in eighth grade, he ended up passing away of a heart attack. He didn't make it to age 41, and I'm 40 now. So, like, those numbers are not, you know, oblivious to me. And en route to Virginia Beach for his funeral, I was looking forward to seeing my dad's dad. They lived in the same area. And my grandfather, who was driving me on my mom's side, he was like, yeah, I didn't know how else to tell you this, but he passed away yesterday. Like, my dad died, and then, like, 3 days later, his dad died. And the funeral was a double funeral.
Ugh.
Yeah. Like, it was crazy. He learned that his son had died, and it's like a broken heart kind of thing, I guess. I don't know how else to explain it. So that was tough to deal with as a kid, you know, in eighth grade. Not that I don't know. It was weird. So, and then, my mom passed away when I was before I was a senior. My grandfather that I live with, he passed away like in 95. I was like 16 or 17. 16. So like I've had a lot of those experiences early on, and like I try not to take stuff for granted as far as family goes. I don't know. It's weird. I don't really talk about it very much. It doesn't really come up, you know, in general. Yeah. It doesn't come up a lot. So it's definitely eye-opening when you get reminders like this, you know, of friends and family. And I don't know, I think that's one of the reasons personally I feel like I value friends more than family, because I don't have a lot of family left on my mom's side and dad's side, really. So it's sort of take those values that I have to decide what values I want to pass on to my kids and like tell them about, you know, things that are important to me and things that are important to my parents and grandparents that they never met. So it's sort of interesting and weird to broach those topics, and they can be super blunt about it. Like, we'll be at dinner anyway. Like, I think we were at dinner a couple of weeks ago and with Grant, my son Grant, and Samantha and Catherine and some other people, and we're just like eating, and then Grant's like, your mom died, right? Like, like they just bring it up out of nowhere. She's in heaven, right? Like, oh yeah, what? And they just kind of don't have a filter for what, you know, he's 5 years old, so he doesn't know when it's appropriate and when it isn't, and it's just weird sometimes.
Yeah, I have a picture of my parents like sitting here beside me. That's just kind of where it sits. And so my kids have never met my mom. And my dad has had a girlfriend for a couple of years. Her name is Miss Sue. And so there's my dad, they call him Papap. There's Papap and Miss Sue. And I had to like sit them down one day, and I was like, that, you guys know that that's not my mom. Like, you guys understand that people have a mom and people have a dad. Like, somewhere in their life, you know, traditionally. And I was like, you guys have never met my mom. And then this is my mom. And the same thing. Whenever they come here in the office, they'll look down like, that's Pap-Pap. I'm like, and who's that? And they're like, and that kind of like, it opens that wound. I'm like, God, yeah. My kids don't know my mom's name.
Yeah.
I'm like, man, that sucks. I'm like, no, that's Grandma Debbie. Like, that's Grandma Debbie. They're like, yeah, it's Grandma Debbie. And then they do the same thing. She got sick. She died. I'm like, yep. That's factually accurate.
Yeah.
Good job.
My wife never met my mom. Like, you know, not that it ever comes up a lot, but sometimes in different contexts and things, like, it's just, I don't know, she never had the experience of having a pain in the ass in-law. Right? Little things like that. Like, you know, every once in a while I would kind of jokingly say, like, oh, you know how good you have it, you know, or something not super dark, but sometimes the humor goes there. I mean, what can you do but, you know, laugh about it or sort of shine some light in a positive manner as well whenever possible. I don't know. It's a tough subject.
You guys are bringing up something interesting because who my kids think my mom is not actually my mom. And they don't know that. And I don't know when the right time is to kind of talk to them about it. Cause my parents got divorced when I was about 3 and my dad got remarried and she's been my so-called mom ever since. So my stepmom. Yeah. My kids don't know that they're not she's not my biological mom. I'm not really sure when to bring that up.
Is your biological mom still alive?
I think so.
Hmm.
She gave away custody to my dad not long after they got divorced. And our relationship has been strange and interesting ever since. The last time I saw her was probably almost 20 years ago at this point. I've talked to her periodically, but in very, very short instances. And she has another son with, because she got remarried after. Who was actually at Maker Fair. Donovan, what? You actually saw me talking with him. Really,
really,
really light blonde hair guy. He went to the show and launched our live show. He was there last year too. Mm-hmm. And yeah, he's my half-brother.
Half-brother.
Yeah. Mm. I only have half-brothers. I don't have any full.
Same. Realized that was the situation.
Well, it wasn't really the time to kind of explain what was going on.
Well, you kind of alluded of the disconnect.
Yeah.
But I didn't really read anything. I didn't try and read too much into it because I was like, well, if he wants to tell me, he will. If not, then okay.
It was the right moment. I mean, I don't mind talking about it. It was just a strange timing because he kind of cornered me talking, you know, questioning me about a couple of things too. But yeah, it's a weird situation. And, you know, I don't know. So I have a whole nother family in a sense that I have no connection with and my kids don't know anything about it.
See, but maybe I think that these are the things that the stuff that is inside you that you purposely keep in there that makes you human and makes you relatable maybe to your kids whenever they get older, whenever they have issues of their own, that if something were to happen to any one of us right now, that stuff that makes you human or makes you empathetic to whatever they happen to have in their life would be gone. And whether it's bad or it's uncomfortable or it's scary or embarrassing, like those are the things that I know talking to my dad now, like I think I'm closer to my dad now than I ever was growing up after my mom died. And I mean, he and I have talked about things about his childhood to like, I never knew. And it puts my dad in a whole new light. It allows me to kind of understand where, you know, how he became who he was. And, you know, it's not to forgive things. It's not that he was a bad person or it gives your parents from your kids' perspective, it gives you a level of humanity and understanding that they would have never gotten if they known, if you choose to let them know, like, The happy moments, the bad moments.
I don't know when I should. You know, I don't know if it's better when they're younger because I have no intention of them meeting her. I have no intention of ever seeing her again. Yeah. So I don't know what's to be gained from it. Although I have this weird feeling of almost like that they're being lied to in a way, because you know genetically, you know, I'm not related to my stepmom, which they think, you know, she is. So, like, you know, and you guys were talking about the stuff too about not being able to talk to your mom about, you know, how you were when you were a kid or stuff like that. Well, I have that same thing. It's just that the person still happens to be alive, but still don't have any other information and no connection whatsoever. So it's like the sense of identity that I have no idea of who I am on that side in that family. Even ethnically, it's actually kind of funny because that side of the family is Mexican and English.
Well, I know that from all of us, our heart goes out to Grant and his family.
Yes.
You know, he had four young boys and a wife and a business owner, and he affected so many people. And when something like this, like, it makes you kind of retreat inward a little bit and think about, you know, if something were to happen to you. And hopefully this show hasn't been super morbid, but it does give a little perspective and kind of into our individual lives and how we have internalized things like this in our past. And as we're internalizing it now, things that you can kind of prepare for in the future. Like you're saying, like you may have had those conversations with your spouse, but just never kind of made the leap to get a will or to do those things. Like if it is these unfortunate circumstances in our community that are the catalyst for actually following through some of those things, then wonderful. I think it's one of those things that it's an upfront cost, but a huge headache saver for the people that you love in the future.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. And if you'd like to reduce that headache, use our coupon code at LegalZoom, Making Geeks. No, just kidding. That would be a terrible segue, wouldn't it?
What? Man, for a sponsor. You had it going there. I was like, damn.
It wouldn't be a terrible segue if we actually had that sponsorship. So.
But I remember when my mom died, I had to teach my dad how to pay bills. Like, he had never done it before. And it's little things like that, like... Again, understanding things and confronting them now as a parent can inform how you teach your kids to do certain things so they can be more independent, or they can know, you know, what the important things are in your family. Because, yeah. I mean, as Wes talked about, like, and as I think a parent to everybody on the planet living and dying, you're not going to last forever. And as unfortunate as that may be, it could be a whole lot worse if you don't prepare the people that are around you for that inevitability.
Yeah, I had a friend that was one of those kind of matter-of-factly would state things. And I remember one time she was like, yeah, you're just going to have to remember that as a parent, your job is to train your children to live without you.
Yeah.
That's what we're doing every day. Just you're training your child how to survive without you. It's like, oh, that's morbid. Okay. I hope it's more than that, but yeah, you're right. Matter-of-factly stated. All right.
It's just very plainly stated, yep.
I mean, that's as honest as a parenting guide as I've ever heard.
Yeah. So as my yucca squeaks in the background. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You guys ready to kind of turn the corner a little bit and talk about what you're geeking out about?
Yes.
Yeah. I actually have what I've been geeking out about. I went and bought a new book today called Dear Justice League, which my wife has been trying to convince me to start making a comic of our family and our lives, because I draw comics for her for like birthdays and things like that as for like birthday cards. And she's like, you need to make a comic of our life and our family. And so I've been getting back into drawing and like kind of redeveloping those skills back when I was doing animation. And I found an artist by the name of Gustavo Duarte, and this is his newest book called Dear Justice League, and it is fantastic. It is funny. It's really good. I highly recommend everybody get it. It came out yesterday, Dear Justice League by Gustavo Duarte. So that's what I've been geeking out about.
Yesterday was the 30th anniversary of the original Nintendo Game Boy being released in North America. So I was geeking out about that a little bit. And related to that, I was straightening up in the shop listening to the Nintendo Power podcast, which I'd never listened to before.
Thing?
It's what? Yeah, it's not a magazine anymore, but they sort of have a podcast. I never gave it a shot. but they were talking that they had three people on and they were talking about their each individual like top five favorite Game Boy games. And they were describing a couple of them. Some of them I heard of, some of them I hadn't. And two of them mentioned a Donkey Kong game for Game Boy that was released in 1994 and how it was for a lot of people like a underrated game. Like most people never gave it a chance because it's Donkey Kong. Everybody's played Donkey Kong and they know what to expect. And as they were describing it, they got me sort of interested. They said that it was like a, you take the normal Donkey Kong level for the first couple levels, and as you progress, it like completely changes. And Mario has like a lot of different jumping abilities that he had. He was able to do like backflips and like somersaults before they introduced that into Nintendo 64 and Mario 64. So it's sort of like a precursor to that. He can pick up objects and throw them. He can pick up enemies like in Super Mario 2 and throw them. He can use keys to open doors. There are stages that are like Donkey Kong Jr. where he can like swing on vines. He can swing like a gymnast over a bar and like flip and like launch himself, like all kinds of crazy stuff I never knew about. I'm like, man, I know, right? And I was like, man, I need to hop on eBay and check this out. I want to get this. And then it got me thinking, like, I think I have a Donkey Kong game for Game Boy. And I go back in my little massive wall of game stuff, and I have Donkey Kong for the original Game Boy. I just pulled it out, holding up to the screen now. And I looked at it like, well, I don't even know where I got this from. So I like started playing it. It's the one they were talking about. It is that version. And I've been playing this a lot, and it's super fun. It's my favorite Mario based game I never knew existed. Like I never really gave it a shot. Cause I was like, I've played Donkey Kong in the arcade on NES and all the re-releases. I know how that works and I like it, but it's very short. But this is like, there's apparently 100 levels. Wow. And each one is like, they have like a mini map of stages, just like Super Mario 3. They like took a bunch of Nintendo, like Mario ideas and stuffed it into a Donkey Kong game. And it's really fun. So if you're into retro games, check it out.
Have you played Mario Maker 2 yet?
So I have Mario Maker 1 for the Wii U, and I didn't really find there was enough difference between the two versions, so I actually didn't purchase it. If it drops in price, I might, but I wasn't really sold on it. So
my son and I have been playing it. It's really fun.
It is.
I never had the first one, so this is my first introduction to making my own levels and the same thing. So like, it's like a little love letter thing kind of back and forth. Like he'll make one for me to play and then I'll make one for him to play.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Does he hate you by the end of it?
Yeah, he gets mad and then he wants to play something else.
That's awesome.
But he was very diplomatic and made a level for his brother and sister because they always pester him whenever he's playing it. And then they end up fighting and then they end up taking it away. So he made one for them. It's like super easy. They have to jump over like one bad guy and one pit and go jump into the tube and they're done. And they're so proud of themselves that they finally beat a level and he made it just for them. And I was so proud of him.
So I may have to get that just so we can share levels amongst each other.
But I'm geeking out about a trip I get to go on next week. I'm going to Portland, Oregon. I'm going to meet up with some cool people, but I'm going there for the Autodesk Fusion 360 Academy. So I guess every so often Autodesk puts on this like 2 or 3 day course where they have a bunch of different topics and you get kind of small group instruction on Fusion, you know, modeling, sketching, rendering, that kind of stuff. So I'm pretty stoked. I think I've been to Portland maybe one time before in my life and not long enough to actually remember anything. And it's just me. So it's for I like to make stuff, but I'm the only one that's going. And so I get to stay in a hotel room by myself, which hasn't happened in a very long time. I'm going to meet up with Matt Reganini, one of our past guests from Never Not Making, who works for Nike out there now. So, yeah, I'm pretty stoked.
That's cool. That should be fun.
Hopefully I should be back in time to record next week.
Okay.
Oh, wait a minute. No, I won't. Okay. I won't be. So if we get back at 10 on Friday, we can. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
get back at 10, so I will not be.
I am geeking out about a piece of software. The new version of Blender is now an official release. And I think it's a really cool thing. One of the reasons I'm geeking out about it is it's still probably the best animation software out there that is free for anybody. And it's a big deal for, well, for anybody on a budget, but also for, you know, like my students who can't afford a whole lot. And it runs on machines that are even a lot lower power than traditionally. And they've made so many improvements, even to like the real-time renderer, that that makes it worth using. And I think one of the big game studios, I forget which one it is, it's either Ubisoft or Epic, just donated like $10 million to Blender because it's open source software and the continued development of it. And it's getting really close to being a real contender to something like Maya. And that's kind of exciting to see. That's it. Well, we'd love to hear from all of you. Go ahead and check out our website, makinggeeks.com. You know, on the contact page, you could send us any questions or suggestions you have for the show. We love hearing from all of you. We, you know, get quite a few emails every week, just people listening and saying they like what we're talking about. And then on the homepage of the site, you could listen to all of our past episodes right there. Check out makinggeeks.com.
Aside from all the social media stuff we do for Making Geeks, we do social media stuff individually. And so you can come check us out individually instead of all the stuff we do as a group. Sean can be found over at Geek Builders. Wes can be found at Geeksmithing. Josh is found at Josh_makestuff. And I'm found at Once Upon a Workbench.
And we'd like to take this opportunity to thank our patrons over at patreon.com/makinggeeks for helping keep this show on the air with their financial contributions every episode, which is super appreciative. We're super appreciative of. I would like to thank our top patron, Clinton from C3D Prop Shop. He is the top patron. We want to shout him out specifically for that. Thank you, buddy. And we actually have a special announcement. We reached our first tier for funding goal. We were at $25 per episode, which is awesome. And as a perk for that, because we reached it, we're going to start doing a monthly giveaway at random. So one of our patrons will get a free item every month. And tonight, we're actually going to figure out who that person is. So what is the item that they would be receiving, Josh?
I'm going to give away this super dope print in place gray and ruby red lightsaber.
That is pretty cool. I'm going to hit a random number generator. Let's see who gets it.
I hope it's me.
It's Seth Williams. Seth Williams.
Boy, Seth. I honest to God, I probably have stuff that we should have mailed to Seth a long time ago.
That's probably fair.
Now you have an opportunity to mail all of it.
Congratulations, Seth.
That's awesome.
Good job, buddy. And if you want to be eligible for next month's giveaway, head over to your Making Geeks account over at patreon.com/makinggeeks.
That was a good save.
Boom. Yeah. I did it. That's
good. Well, everybody, thank you for hanging out with this episode or with us through this episode. I hope it gave you some things to think about and to hopefully implement in your life. If you are affected by this, if you're affected by loss in any way, please reach out to people and talk about it. Now, it's not easy. You may feel like you're bothering people, but you're really not. Everybody needs an outlet, especially when you have something like this going on in your life. If you have loss, even if Grant's channel made an impact on you and you really just want to tell somebody about it, reach out to us on social media, reach out to people in the community and share in this moment where everybody can kind of pay their online respects to somebody who had really done great things for the community as a whole. So from all of us to all of you, we hope you have a fantastic week.
See you guys.
Take care.
I'm streaming. Everything's good. I'm happy with it.